Walt Disney once said that for every laugh, there should be a tear, which is why I think, anyway, he would have loved Drawn to Life, that hugely entertaining, surprising, and emotional spectacle, which is now being presented live on stage at Disney Springs in Lake Buena Vista, Florida. Presented by Cirque du Soleil and Disney, this is a show that I can guarantee you will captivate audiences of all ages. Drawn to Life is a must-see, family-friendly spectacle that will leave you, well, in awe. So don't miss out on your chance to be part of the magic. Plan your visit to Disney Springs today and reserve your seats for Drawn to Life by Cirque du Soleil and Disney live on stage. Set your imagination in motion.
Welcome back to another edition of the Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. It's me, Len Testa, and this is our show for the week of Schmurz Day, April 29th, 2024. On the show today, news, surveys, and listener questions. Then in our main segment, Jim Hill is joined by Imagineer Jim Scholl to talk about how Disney works unexpectedly hot new characters into the parks without building a new attraction, and what can go wrong when that happens. Let's get started by bringing in the man who says that it is not proper office behavior, no matter how good it feels, to say, "Hey, train wreck, this isn't your station," when someone interrupts you at work. It's Mr. Jim Hill. Jim, how's it going?
It's going well, Len. And speaking of trains, I don't know if you saw this last month on March 27th. Disney Parks posted a video where a friend of the show, Josh Gad, got to be a conductor on the Disneyland train for a day. This was a follow-up to the video.
He's living my best life,
Josh Gad. Well, that's the thing. This is a follow-up to his video from February of last year where Josh got to be a Jungle Cruise skipper for a day. And gotta say, Josh looks spiffy in his train conductor outfit and can't wait to see the next video in this series. But beyond that, trains. I took Amtrak cross country in the summer of 1985 so I could take part in the 30-hour long Disneyland 30th anniversary party, also cover the event. Also, hidden agenda here, Len, Amtrak was in real trouble at that time. There was a lot of talk about pulling the federal funding, and I figured, you know, if I was ever going to be able to ride the rails, this was my one and only shot. So I have to say, Len, the stretch of train track from Chicago to Seattle, beautiful, majestic scenery.
Yeah.
You live in the brochure. On the other hand, the train from Boston to Chicago.
Laurel has the exact same experience.
You are looking into every cluttered backyard in the Northeast. And more to the point, it's like, wow, this is an amazing array of rusted out cars. You know, it's just sort of like, if you're going to take the train, folks, start in Chicago, all right? And more to the point, if you travel out to L.A., get off at Union Station. I mean, it's exactly what you've seen in the film. It's a beautiful old station. So
it's like a movie.
It is exactly.
Yeah, I do the same thing. Like, because Laurel loves trains, and I like going on a train too. And yeah, it's the same thing. Like you're going past these backyards, and the interesting thing is like how much effort went into engineering, designing, and building these rusted out hulks of cars that now dot the landscape. Yeah. It's kind of amazing to think of like how much stuff we've made and then discarded. But
true.
Yeah, I mean, I love a train though. I love
same
a good train
ride. Same thing here.
All right, Jim, let's do a quick shout out to subscribers. Thanks to everyone who subscribes to the show over at patreon.com/Jim Hill Media, including Ryan O'Reilly, Ben Ackerman, Rich Howard, Miss and Trish, Peggy DW77, and P. Clemen. Jim, this is the Disney beverage team searching for the next generation of sodas for Epcot's Club Cool. They say that fan favorites like Beverly will always be there, and they're working with Coca-Cola to develop new flavors, including static electricity, station wagon wood paneling, and the feeling you get when you eat all your snacks before the movie trailers end. True story. If you had to describe Beverly, right, like without using fruit as a flavor, like how would you? That's what I was going with for this one.
That snacks before the movie begins. That's right up there. Okay.
Yes. So it is. All right, Jim. On to the news, folks. The news is sponsored by TouringPlans.com. TouringPlans helps you save time and money at theme parks like Walt Disney World. Check us out at TouringPlans.com. All right, Jim, every show should begin with a round of self-congratulations, and in this case, actual congratulations are in order, too. On the April 20th, 2023 show, so over a year ago, we said that we thought Victoria and Albert should get 2 Michelin stars, and we specifically highlighted the leadership of V&A's manager Israel Perez in guiding that establishment. And then last week, Victoria and Albert's earned its first Michelin star this year, 1 star, which makes it one of 26 Michelin-starred restaurants in Florida. Also, Israel won Michelin's 2024 Service Award for Florida, which is an individual honor that he very, very much deserved. So congratulations to the entire team. Worked for a very long time to get to this point. So I still think V&A will eventually earn that second star. It seems rare, though, Jim, for Michelin to award a 2-star rating to a restaurant for the first time it gets stars.
That's true.
And I went back and looked at this, actually. Something like 90% of starred restaurants start off with 1 star. So going back to 2019 and looking at just New York restaurants, there's only been a couple of restaurants that started off with 2 stars, and a lot of them aren't there anymore. So yeah, anyway, so I think eventually next year they'll get a second star. But for now, congratulations on the 1, and congratulations to Israel.
Very cool. Well-deserved.
Absolutely. Also, Jim, last week, the Anaheim City Council provided initial approval for Disney's plans for Disneyland Forward, which is the new development plan for the Disneyland Resort. There's a second vote scheduled for May 7th. And if I understand correctly, Jim, this Disney commits to spending just under $2 billion over 10 years at Disneyland. But they didn't say whether this is new, whether it's incremental or anything like that. Is this... new?
Well, we have had the public portion of this, but there is the behind the scenes aspect to the effect of Disney can't fully open the kimono, you know, so far, so to speak, because they need zoning changes. That's one of the reasons they've been meeting with the Anaheim City Council and that sort of thing. There are a number of parking lots and that sort of thing directly around the Disneyland Resort that they have to change the language due to drainage issues, that sort of thing. It's only when those can be, you know, okay, we can develop on those, we can build on those. That's when we'll get the big picture, so to speak, about what Disney genuinely intends to do here. And it's ambitious.
So there's a proposed parking structure that is in the plan. It's east of Harvard Boulevard and north of Disney Way. And also there's a transfer of control of Magic Way, the road, to Disney from the state of California, which can be converted to pedestrian use.
Pointing out the parking structure east of Harbor Disney Way, that the idea there is that is supposed to service folks driving up to the Disneyland Resort from San Diego for the day.
Okay. Off the 5.
I mean, the notion was that previously these folks, when they were coming to the resort, then had to sort of peel off, get on Ball Road or thereabouts, and then make their way over. And again, this is all about getting people into the parks as quickly as possible so they can start opening their wallets. So it's like, and more to the point, taking that additional traffic. The folks who are coming up from San Diego aren't then competing with the folks who have driven down from LA for the day to get in. I mean, there is method to Disney's madness here. They want, the bulk of the guests in the park no later than 10 a.m. Yeah, but at the same time, Len, you look at where that parking structure is Harbor and Disney Way. I mean, that's going to be a bit of a schlep to get over to the actual physical park.
It is, and Disney's noted in the Disneyland Forward plans the existence of or the proposal for possible walking bridges. And so these are – I put the plan in the show notes in case anyone wants to follow along. But these are noted by dark purple lines, and there's 2 fairly long walking bridges, one that goes basically from Catella and follows Disneyland Drive, and the other one is the one that you mentioned that goes basically from the corner of Disney Way and Harbor all the way up to the middle of Disneyland. So that would make sense.
It would. It would, but just to stress here, when Disney previously floated this idea, and the notion was that, you know, guests would use these walkways, the businesses along Harbor were like, and of course, they're going to have egress to come down and buy a burger at McDonald's and that sort of thing. And it's like,
Right. Yeah, there are no exits on the possible walking bridge. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, you know, and you get it from a security point of view, especially now with, you know, the idea of putting bag check as far out as it is. But the notion is that once you've gone through bag check, you're going straight into the parks or to the retail entertainment dining corridor.
I mean, it's tricky from the city council's perspective, because on the one hand, they want to, if there's a walking bridge, that would alleviate the actual sidewalk congestion from local residents who really want to use the sidewalks that they paid for. That makes sense, right? And the other thing too is, you know, in addition to the security stuff, you want to make sure that, you know, the people who are on these possible walking bridges don't do anything dumb like throw stuff into traffic on Harbor Boulevard, right? So it's got to be contained, it's got to be elevated, but at the same point, you also don't want to shut off the local merchants from that foot traffic. So there's a lot of competing things there that all can't be satisfied.
No, that's it exactly. There are so many competing agendas here that Disney's got to service. It's going to be fascinating once we get to the actual reveal of what the plan is and the commentary phase. So
I'm also interested in the size of the possible immersive theme park that Disney's proposing here, because it looks like it'd be even slightly bigger than DCA.
Well, yes, but what's especially interesting about this project is that later this year, we're going to get Fantasy Springs opening up at Tokyo Disney Sea, which again, you know, one of the components of that is a hotel that's basically in the park. And,
right. You
know, this seems to be the flavor of the month at, you know, Imagineering and with upper management at Disney. And what's kind of interesting is I've been hearing from folks about, you know, this idea being brought to Anaheim. Also, Len, I don't know if you've heard this as well. All right,
I'm just saying you and I have talked on the show previously, yep, about how the area west of the Magic Kingdom has now been reclassified as marginally suitable for hotels. I'm just saying,
yeah. So just that's another thing to be aware of, that, you know, this $60 billion expansion or, you know, the enhancements of the Disney parks worldwide, part of what Disney's up to is being very keen on recovering that $60 billion. And it's, you know, hey, you know, a hotel room inside of a Disney park probably wouldn't be cheap, Lynn. I'm just saying.
No, I would imagine not. No, because, I mean, at Disneyland Paris, I had a friend who's going next month, and they're like, this is the most expensive hotel room I've ever stayed in. And I'm like, it's not even going to be that nice, but it's going to be very picturesque. Yeah. All right. We'll see. All right. I'm just going to mention it here. There's a general construction permit for Journey into Imagination that runs well into 2025. I don't think this is a refurb or anything like that, but I do think that it's unusual, Jim, that we've heard nothing about Epcot when Disney's talking about the next 10 years of theme park development in Florida. So, like, we know Animal Kingdom is definitely getting Tropical Americas, right? That's all but confirmed, right? And, yep, well, D23 will be the big official announcement for that. Magic Kingdom is very, very likely to get Beyond Big Thunder in the long term, because that's all they're talking about. And even some stuff in the near term after Tiana's. And Studios is getting stuff starting next year, which we can't talk about yet. But there's no secret that there's a gaping animation courtyard-sized hole in the park's capacity as well. Epcot has that test track redo. And Disney's shown a fondness for updating older attractions instead of building new. So Dinosaur, Tiana's, Country Bears, right, and Test Track. So a redo here would make sense, especially at Journey, where, Jim, I don't know if you know this, but Figment is a really popular character.
Yes, yes. In fact, I forget who I was talking with about this, given that we had the Figment popcorn bucket in 2023, and then we had the Journey into Imagination with Figment building popcorn bucket in 2024. And so it's like, all right, so what combination, what Venn diagram of these two, are we going to see in 2025? Yeah, there is a keen understanding, within, the Disney management, so to speak, that, they could really turn the key on something significant with imagination. I'm tapping into the nostalgia, tapping into the urge or the need for Figment merch, but it's just sort of like, all right, what are we willing to spend? And, and more to the point is, you and I both know from that, that Epcot 10-year plan that we saw, once upon a time, there was a plan for a $170 million redo of this particular pavilion. And it's just sort of like, so they were going to do it. So now the question is, with a permit pulled like this, it's like, what does that mean? Does it mean that that's actually finally going to happen? But as you mentioned, with so much construction going on elsewhere on the around the resort, that sort of investment?
What's a priority? Yeah.
Yeah. Realistic for Epcot right now. So,
I mean, I think, that's a thing. So they're going to run into just resource allocation issues. No. But on the other hand, if you think about how, Disney likes to build out its parks, they generally follow a four-corner strategy, right? Where you've got headliner attractions in, the park's four corners. So if you think about like Magic Kingdom, you've got Tiana's and Big Thunder on the west. You've got Space Mountain and Tron in the east. You've got Fantasyland in the north, right? And then you've got, Main Street, obviously, where the parades and stuff happen in the south. And the same thing is true for, Animal Kingdom, right? So you've got Pandora on the west. You've got the new Dino Land stuff coming sort of in the south. You've got Kilimanjaro Safaris in the north, and you've got Everest in the east. But Epcot, Epcot has, Remy in the south. Remember, Epcot is flipped, right? Remy in the south. You've got Guardians in the north. You'll have Test Track, the new version of Test Track in the east. But on the west side, you've got Soarin', and you can update the film and whatever. But you really need an attraction draw there to sort of balance out the four corners of the park. And so this might be that.
Yeah. And I also just want to put this out there. We do have Inside Out 2 dropping this summer, coming out in theaters in June. And remember, there had been some discussion about changing out the old Honey, I Shrunk theater, to an Inside Out based film. So, just going to be interesting to see to what actually happens here. So,
I wouldn't be surprised to see a Journey into Imagination redo on the list of projects that Imagineering wants to use that $60 billion for. But it needs to get approved, so we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
all right, last bit of news. Disney's announced the dates for Epcot's Food and Wine Festival. And Jim, I don't know how to say this, but Disney has shortened the runtime of an Epcot festival. And I'm checking with our lawyers to see if that is legally possible. But right now it's running August 29th to November 23rd, which is about a month shorter than last year when it ran July 27th to November 18th. Jim, this will also be the first year that Communicore Hall will be used for the festival, right? And that opens June 10th. So Jim, why shorten the festival?
Wow. Okay, so we have Communicore Hall opening on June 10th. And so we push off, that's roughly, 10 weeks. Do we have anything announced in regard to performers appearing in Communicore Hall? Do we have a...
We're doing that Encanto themed show. I think that's running basically that June through like September.
This is kind of fascinating. What are you hearing? I face it. This is going to be the summer, so to speak, of Tiana's Bayou Adventure.
Right. Okay. So that was my one theory, that maybe they think summer's already strong enough with the discounts they have and with Tiana's opening that they don't need this for Epcot. The other sort of thing that I'm kicking around as an idea, is this, you know, Epcot got Remy, Epcot got Guardians, Epcot's getting Test Track, it's getting the all new, you know, front of the park. At some point, the question Disney executives have to answer is that enough to get Epcot to stand on its own? Because we've all known that basically throughout the entire Bob Iger era, number one, Epcot's kind of been underinvested in, and number two, they've used festivals as the draw instead of attractions. So Disney could be saying, you know, have we built enough at Epcot to make it stand on its own without constant festivals? And this could be that test.
Well, I mean, the irony, though, is if that's the idea they're exploring, you know, how much of what they did to Future World, breaking it down to world discovery, world nature, world celebration. I mean, the whole notion was, you know, the party started earlier in the front of the park now. And, you know, if anything, you know, everything I've ever heard was about, you know, Epcot is festivals 24/7. And, wow, I have to start making some calls. That's now, mind you, okay, Flower and Garden, when does that end this year?
Jim, it ends, end of May.
Wow. Okay. I hate to say this a lot. This suggests they have a lot of faith in Kumiticker Hall as being a draw. And are you getting that vibe? Are you, you know, it's like, honey, get the plane tickets. They're opening Kumiticker Hall. We got to go, you know.
I will say this. I was in the new World Celebration area that's been open for a couple months now. Every time I go through that, I really enjoy it more and more. I think it's a great design, very Epcot-y. I like it a lot. My other thought on this is, but go back to answer your question. No, I don't think that anyone's actually visiting Epcot just for Kumiticker Hall. It could be too that first month of Food and Wine, if it runs in July, is so weak in terms of sales, because again, who wants cheddar cheese soup when it's 98 degrees outside? You know, it could be that the sales just aren't big enough to rationalize it, and that they're like, well, look, you know, we're only giving up X dollars the first month of Food and Wine when it starts in July. Let's go test these other ideas that we have, and even if they don't work out, we haven't lost that much money in the overall scheme of things.
Yeah, but so, when you think of all of the money that has been spent over the past 10, 15 years building all of those, you know, I mean, you know, the way they do the kitchens now, so you can look in and see the food being made, which then inspires you to get in line and get the food. It's just the notion of turning your back on that investment, you know, even for a few weeks, just seems a trifle crazy to me. But let's see how it plays out.
So, oh, yeah. And speaking of money and investment, going back to talking about Figment, the other reason why I like the idea of a Figment redo is that it allows Disney to rotate a new attraction as an individual Lightning Lane, and then rotate something out as a Genie Plus, giving Genie Plus more capacity, which makes people want to spend more money on those programs. And also, are you hearing this too? I think we might have briefly mentioned it, but like Imagineering now, when they're presenting to the board, is including forecasts for Genie Plus and individual Lightning Lane revenue as part of the overall ROI for an attraction.
You know, especially given the cost these days, it's that weird mix of elements to the effect of, would this, you know, be something that would make guests, you know, the intent to visit thing. There's like, ooh, I want to go, you know, I want to go experience Tiana. But at the same time, it's like, and, you know, when they're in the park and they really want to visit Tiana, they, you know, they'll spring for a Lightning Lane. So it's like, oh, well, okay. Or, yes, absolutely. Well, let's go forward with construction of that. But
I'm not sure that Figment would get people to visit a Disney theme park that haven't visited. But if you haven't been in 20 years.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Or You know, that's be interesting. You know, that they'd have to do something pretty spectacular with Figment to warrant, it's now an intent to visit attraction, the sort of thing that makes people buy plane tickets. But let's see.
I'm just saying, if Figment happens to make an appearance in Inside Out 2, I will pay whatever animator put that in, whatever amount of money they need.
All right. Okay.
On to surveys. Yep. All right. Gene sent in an Animal Kingdom survey from a recent visit. And Jim, a couple of questions here caught my eye, both from a Disney perspective and looking forward to theme park developments over the next year or so. So the first one is, please rate your arrival experience to Disney's Animal Kingdom. And then please include your entire experience from first arriving on the Walt Disney World Resort property, if applicable, up to and including the moment you entered the park. Please be sure to take into account parking, any Disney transportation used, and all cast members encountered along the way. And Jim, I know Disney's been asking this question since at least 2020 in this exact form, but I think resort transportation is going to get a lot more focus over the next 18, 24 months. Yeah. So you remember, like in 2022, as part of my keynote at IAPA, I mentioned that using a theme park bus is possibly the first encounter with public transportation since riding a school bus to school for a lot of America, right? And when I spoke about Universal's transportation for Epic Universe, I made up the phrase time to first ride, which is the amount of time it takes from the moment you leave your hotel room until you're on your first ride, and that Universal really needs to minimize that time, because if it's not done well, it'll just highlight the fact that Universal's spread out over public roads and Disney isn't. Anyway, to our friends at Universal who design surveys, you might want to think about how to ask this and get feedback now.
Okay. So,
all right. The other interesting question I got is this in this survey. Now we'd like to ask you a few questions about just three of the lands you visited at Disney's Animal Kingdom: Discover Island, Asia, and Pandora. And Jim, the interesting thing here isn't what's said, but what's not said. And what's not said is, we're not going to ask you about Dino Land because it's already changing. Mm-hmm. But why isn't Africa on this list, Jim?
Well, all right. Africa. Okay. First of all, if you think about Kilimanjaro Safari, there's not a whole lot you can do there, Len. What's kind of interesting is, we have they figured out how to layer Wild Africa Trek on that to get an additional revenue going. But the hard reality is, between the barns, the umbilicuses, the back of house, it's like, can't fix that. Also, let's be completely honest, it's the Lion King show, wildly popular, still draws a crowd, still pulls people to the back of the park. It's like, so it's one of these things where it's like, okay, we don't need to fix the Lion King show, and we can't do anything about Kilimanjaro. So, there's no point in asking people, what could we do? Because it's just sort of, you can't even do anything really with Pengani, the rainforest walkthrough, because it's
the Gorilla Falls
exploration. Yeah, Gorilla Falls. Yeah. And so it's like, can't do it, can't touch it. These are other areas, that we could potentially do something with. But Discovery Island, Asia, and Pandora.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Africa, but we didn't talk about Conservation Station. But I think the issue there is, even if they put in a Zootopia themed thing there, the problem is you've basically got a single lane highway in the Wildlife Express train going there. And that is nowhere near enough capacity to open up a brand new land with new attractions there. So they have to figure that part out first. And to your point, that train goes right by all the back of house stuff. So that's complicated.
It is. I mean, anytime you talk with anybody in Imagineer about Animal Kingdom, it's just the notion of there are, we built this thing like Fort Knox because, that we don't want, we want the people to see the animals, but we do not want the animals to get out and eat the people. And
we've all seen Jurassic Park. We know
that. There we go.
We
don't want that to happen. There we go. Yeah. And so.
Yeah. Super interesting. All right. We'll see. All right. On to listener emails from Natalia, who says, following your early predictions regarding the opening date for Tiana's, I took a gamble and booked a Walt Disney World trip for June 19th through the 23rd. I live and work in the state of Washington, and Juneteenth, Wednesday 6/19, is a statewide holiday. And so for those unaware, it celebrates the emancipation of enslaved peoples following the end of the Civil War. Do you think that Disney will celebrate Juneteenth this year by opening Tiana's to the public on that date, or will it still be in pass holder previews? All right. So we talked about this before the show began. We're kind of in the point now where we should know something definitive in the next 3 weeks. But Natalia, I would be shocked if Tiana's is not open by June 23rd. Like that's farther out than anything I've heard at this point. So
I think she's
something will have gone wrong, like with the ride safety system or something at that point. Yeah. Yeah. Also from Greg, a correction to my theory about the schedule for Tiana's cast member previews, given that cast members are blocked out of the Magic Kingdom from June 3rd to the 14th. Greg says, when I was cast, every preview I went to had a separate park entrance where you could enter without using your main entrance pass. Depending on how they want to set up the preview, you might not even enter the park. For the Guardians preview, we didn't enter the park at all, especially since it's the Magic Kingdom. It's possible that the bio previews could be held by busing in the cast members backstage from one of the northern cast lots. And that's true, right? So I forgot about this.
It's not wrong. I mean,
When you run through the Magic Kingdom for the races, you run past Tiana's on your right, and there's a whole backstage area that they could bring people in. So yeah, that's true.
Absolutely. Good point, Greg. I mean, you know, that they could basically, bring folks or have them park by the cast center out behind the Magic Kingdom, take the perimeter road and bus them in. And hell, you know, they could literally walk these folks in the back door, plunk them in to the flume ride vehicles. And the other thing worth noting here is it's entirely possible that they would start to do this, after park closed. So,
That's possible too. Yeah. I mean, I have checked with a number of cast members as of this morning, and there was still no details internally about cast member dates. So a lot of this is speculation, but still, we'll know. All right, we'll see. Thank you for that, Greg. All right, from Steven, this is a question for you, Jim. He says, I was listening to an old episode of another podcast, and Steven thankfully said, sacrilege, yes. And they made a reference to the Amateur Athletic Union and the contract that permits them to use the former home of the Walt Disney World Preview Center as their headquarters. As the story went, the AAU uses the office space and agrees to bring competitions of all sorts to Disney property, thus selling loads and loads of hotel rooms to amateur athletes of all types. But the 30-year term of that deal concludes in 2024. And Jim, I did verify that. So is the AAU getting the boot? If so, what's in store for the former Preview Center? And I will point out this. Jim, I went back and as I was doing the research on this, the AAU says their headquarters is actually at the Wide World of Sports complex, not the former Preview Center, but they do have offices there. So the lease is up in 2024. Are they doing anything?
I have to say that you and I in fact we did a band camp show where we walked the road for Hotel Plaza, and that's a beautiful chunk of real estate right there. I mean, right up against the water, that sort of thing. I mean, if the lease is in fact up this year, and they keep offices there, but their headquarters is over at the sports center.
I mean, it's a very expensive piece of real estate for amateur athletics.
That's it, exactly, and particularly for a one-story building. All right, we'll see
what happens.
All right. So.
Our friend Veronica writes in about turkeys, of all things, which I discussed in my Fort Wilderness campground horseback riding last week. And Veronica says, I live in New Hampshire, and turkeys are terrifying. They're basically dinosaurs with feathers and stare you down from the street while you're in your car. One attacked a mailman in Cambridge or Somerville, Mass. Early this year. The mailman was hospitalized.
All right. First of all, Veronica's not wrong. In fact, I feed the birds here at the house, and regularly I will look out and there will be turkeys out on the porch looking in like, fat man, the food's gone. It's like, hey, come outside, refill, we'd like a snack. So, she's not wrong. They are definitely dinosaur stand-ins and, always glad to see them go on their way. So
do the turkeys give you the look like, hey, we're out of food, we just want to talk, come on outside? I don't know that I would trust them based on what Veronica says.
And again, you know, your instincts are correct, Len. You know, that they've heard about Thanksgiving and they are not happy about it. So.
All right. Two more questions. One from Ken. And I got this question twice in the last week, which is why I threw it on here. Any word on when or if resort merchandise delivery might return at Walt Disney World? I imagine there must have been considerable cost or labor involved with the program, but I know that I bought more stuff knowing that I would not have to schlep it back to my hotel, and I suspect I wasn't the only one. And so this is an interesting question. On the one hand, you know, Disney definitely wants to sell more merch. Number two, you could store it in a locker for which they charge you already. And so bringing back resort merchandise delivery would lower locker rentals and increase labor costs.
But again, it's one of these disconnect moments that I find fascinating, Lynn. I mean, think about it. You know, we live in an Amazon world. All right.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
You sit at your computer and it's like you decide, I want a toaster at 9 o'clock in the morning. And sometimes the toaster shows up at 3 o'clock. And the notion that you then go to vacation at Walt Disney World, which used to have merchandise pickup, you know, and everybody loved it. And then the decision, we don't want to do what you already experienced at home. You know, the notion of, you know, you order something and it shows up at your house. It's like, no, that's too much trouble. It's like, you know, it's one of these things where it's like, are you guys actually looking outside of the berm anymore to see what's going on in the real world?
I'm just saying, Jim, you know, drone delivery is a thing and we've got 500 of them coming to Disney Springs.
Speaking of which, I actually tweeted this out on social media last week. Quick story, Nancy and I took my mom to lunch. We went down to visit her in Massachusetts, and there's a lovely little cafe at the Stowe Airport just up the street. And we'd taken my dad there previously and figured this would be a nice time for her. So we take her there, and we're sitting in the window. And I can't help but notice that off down the runway is this thing. You know, I mean, it looks like it's the size of an SUV. It's got five different propellers coming off of it. And I'm like, what is that? All right. And eventually, as we're having lunch, they push it by the window, Len. And I will send you a copy of this photo. It turns out it's a hydrogen-powered passenger vehicle. That, literally the future got pushed by me while I was having lunch. You know,
it's a flying car.
It's a flying car, you know, and
what?
And evidently there are, you know, this airport is, mind you, it was painted gunmetal gray, but it did have the company logo on the side of its skull, I think it was called. That is closer than we think because, you know, they're out there testing it and evidently, you know, there's enough technology companies and universities down in Massachusetts that are very, very invested in this idea about, wow, that could change transportation. So, you know, they're out trying it already, but.
On the one hand, I applaud any sort of like, you know, experimental use of technology because that's how we learn things. On the other hand, Jim, I have to observe that a number of our fellow citizens have trouble driving in a two-dimensional reality and a three-dimensional reality is not going to make that problem easier.
Okay.
And also, flying cars for Autopia would be a hoot.
I went down that road myself. I on the other hand, looked at the gunmetal gray and it's like, oh, Dumbo. You know, but, you know, that's another story. There we go.
So. Fantastic. All right. Well, we know of Imagineers. We can pitch this idea too. All right. Last email who says, and this one's from Owen, who says, I just wanted to start by thanking you guys for all you do. I'd like to show you something I think you and Jim might enjoy for the podcast. MC Parks, like Minecraft Parks, is a 1-to-1 scale recreation of the Disney parks in Minecraft, home to Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Universal, Orlando, and more. Let me know if you have any questions getting it set up. And Owen sent a link on YouTube to it as well. And Owen, let me just say this. I looked at it and I'm a sucker for theme park recreations. Our friends at Futureport 82 are doing God's work over there with Epcot. But Owen, this is why I don't own video games, because if I did, I would be whatever the Minecraft equivalent of a crack user is. It's all I would do all day long, and I would give up work in order to play these games. But I might have to try this one, so we'll see.
Okay. I will go eyeball this, but like Len, I this is one of the reasons why I'm religious about staying away from video games. I just do.
Yeah, it's too much.
I want to fall into the habit. So.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, Jim Hill and Jim Scholl discuss how Disney works hot new characters into the parks as quickly as possible and what happens when that goes wrong. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. We all have things we need to get off our chest. In my case, it's usually our cat, Betty, who, thanks to Nancy and I feeding her way too many treats, now weighs as much as a cinder block. But you get what I'm saying, right? That we all carry around different stressors in life, some big, some small. And if you keep that stuff bottled up inside and don't ever deal with it, well, does the name Mount St. Helens mean anything to you? And if you've been stressing out lately about all the stressors you have in your life, well, therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, and more importantly, then figure out how to work through whatever it is that's been weighing you down. And if that sounds like something you might like to try, well, let me introduce you to BetterHelp. BetterHelp is entirely online and can help provide you with convenient and affordable therapy. To get started, just fill out a brief questionnaire, which will then aid BetterHelp in matching you with a licensed therapist. This online service is deliberately designed to be flexible and suited to your schedule, and if for some reason you and your therapist just don't click, you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Look, anyone who's listened to this podcast previously knows I went through a rough patch following my divorce, and I honestly don't know where I would be today if, back then, I hadn't sought out professional help, sat down with a therapist who then taught me coping skills, gave me the tools I needed to dig myself out of the deep, dark, emotional hole I had fallen into. And BetterHelp can do the same for you. So if you've got something weighing you down, not like Betty the cat, an emotional thing, a stressor, get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/DisneyDish today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DisneyDish. We thank them for sponsoring today's show. Walt Disney once said that for every laugh there should be a tear, which is why I think anyway. He would have loved Drawn to Life, that hugely entertaining, surprising, and emotional spectacle that's now being presented live on stage at Disney Springs in Lake Buena Vista, Florida. Presented by Cirque du Soleil and Disney, this is a show that I can guarantee you will captivate audiences of all ages. I saw this show during a recent trip to Walt Disney World, and let me tell you, I'm ready to go see it again right now. Drawn to Life is filled with breathtaking acrobatics, stunning visuals, and heartwarming storytelling. The creative geniuses behind Cirque du Soleil and Walt Disney Animation Studios have come together to create this show where imagination literally knows no bounds. Filled with dazzling performances, not to mention beloved Disney characters coming to life in ways you've only just dreamed about, Drawn to Life is a must-see, family-friendly spectacle that will leave you, well, in awe. So don't miss out on your chance to be part of the magic. Plan your visit to Disney Springs today and reserve your seats for Drawn to Life by Cirque du Soleil and Disney, live on stage. Set your imagination in motion.
And we're back. And we welcome back veteran Imagineer Jim Scholl, who, because he did so much work in Walt Disney Studios Park in Paris on things like Crush's Coaster, on Avengers Assemble, and so on, things we've talked about before on Disney Impact, we thought we'd bring Jim back this week to discuss the news that recently came out about that theme park. Mr. Hill.
Which is getting, well, I'm not sure if we call this a thing a stunt show or a stage show. It goes by the name Alice and the Queen of Hearts Back in Wonderland. Now, I mean, the show description says that Back in Wonderland will be an ultra colorful pop rock face off between Alice and the Queen of Hearts. But as part of the show, there will also be acrobatics and BMX riders that I'm reading right off the press release here will defy the laws of gravity with their limit pushing high flying tricks. And did I mention that the audience also gets to choose the way the show ends? I guess the Back to the Wonderland show is supposed to have at least two endings, and the Mad Hatter himself will preside over the final vote.
Okay, so Jim, ultra colorful pop rock face off, acrobats, BMX riders, and then the Mad Hatter. Are we describing here Coachella or the Electoral College? I'm trying to figure out here, like, what could be both. Could be both. We don't know. We don't know.
Either way, yeah.
You know, like, if you had said Olivia Rodrigo in here, I would be like 100%. Or Sabrina Carpenter, because she slayed at Coachella this year. All right, go ahead.
She did. Okay, well, anyway, those are the basics when it comes to Alice, the Queen of Hearts, Back in Wonderland, which, by the way, opens at Disneyland Paris Resort in 3 weeks and change on May 25th, to be exact.
Okay, so, Jim, I've got a couple of quick follow-up questions. Where exactly in Walt Disney Studios Park there in Paris is this new Back to Wonderland show going to be?
Well, again, referring to the press release, this live show is supposed to be presented several times a day in the Theater of the Stars outdoor arena.
Isn't that where Let's Motor Action used to be?
Yeah, it is. It's exactly there. But according to the Alice's show director, the village in the south of France that was built for the lights, motors, action, it's now going to be repurposed. It's going to have now a new stage, actually, which is going to be a whole lot closer to those 2,000 guests that are sitting in their grandstand. Even so, you know, it's still a really, really big stage. I mean, as I said, it was originally built for 2,000 guests. And we're talking about a performance space that's 223 feet long by 53 feet deep. It's one of the largest stadiums that Disney ever built.
That's like a quarter of an acre just for the stage.
Yeah, it's not a small place. But, you know, what's really funny about this is that when Walt Disney Studios Park announced that it would be closing its version of Lights, Motors, Action back in March of 2020, you know, I had a bet that the park would eventually circle back around to reusing this facility. I mean, for the most obvious of reasons, because it's got a set of stands for 2,000 people with its own block of toilets that the people sit directly above. You never bulldoze infrastructure like that.
Yeah, there's got to be an Imagineer notepad, and at the top is printed, "But first, save the bathrooms." Like
yeah, in all cases, save the toilets. Check.
Exactly.
Move on. Yeah, we came to the toilets. Check. Your project is green lit.
Exactly.
Move along.
All right. So didn't I hear something though about a Jungle Book themed attraction going in there at some point?
Oh yeah. I mean, you're talking about the famous or infamous Jungle Book Jive. That actually got far along enough in the plans for that production that they actually painted the still standing sets for Lights, Motors, Action forest green. I mean, your little French village was now repainted in a lovely shade of green. A little thing called the pandemic interfered, stepped in, and, you know, great ideas were put temporarily and now permanently on pause.
Okay, so let me ask this question, though. I get, you know, Jungle Book has, you know, the thing was released, what, 50, 60, 70 years ago? I get that. But Alice in Wonderland's not exactly new either. I mean, the Johnny Depp one came out, what, like 10, 15 years ago?
Well, yeah, the Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland was released to theaters back in March of 2010, and the sequel, Alice Through the Looking
Glass. I forgot about the sequel. Okay, all right, go ahead. Yeah.
There we go. Well, no, but even that was a while ago. I mean, it didn't.
Me and the American movie going public forgot about the sequel. All right, go ahead.
Atlanta on the opening weekend, they forgot about the sequel. All right. I went on the opening weekend. I have been in phone booths that had bigger crowds. It was, you know, but that was back in May of 2016.
It's a nice turnout for a wake.
But you had popcorn, so all was well.
All right. Okay, so if all of these things happened a long time ago, this is not an attempt by Disney to cash in on some current IP, which sounds unusual.
No. You'd say that's a little on the stale side, but not the popcorn.
I'm just missing the angle. The I'm wrong. I'm missing the angle.
But, you know, what we're talking about here now is not based on the Tim Burton version of either one of his movies. But it's actually, you know, well, it's actually coming at it from a completely different direction. Because you see, the Queen of Hearts, or as some at Disney call her, the Red Queen, this Alice in Wonderland character, well, she's kind of having her own moment in time.
Oh, yeah, that's right. 3 weeks ago, Mouse House released a teaser trailer for The Rise of Red, which is the fourth film in the Descendants series.
Yeah, the visuals for that looked great. I mean, just from an ad campaign, really compelling, really good stuff. Yeah. Okay, so those are the movies about the kids of the Disney villains that go to school somehow?
Yeah. And this one, which is supposed to premiere on Disney Plus in mid-July this year, it's supposed to follow the daughters of the Queen of Hearts and Cinderella as they travel back in time to prevent a coup.
So Back to the Future, but with Disney princesses.
Oh, my. I haven't seen the films or the previews or anything about it, so I'm going to need a scorecard if and when I ever get around to watching Descendants, because I just don't know much about the series. But I do know that Disney Publishing has a couple of new books hitting store shelves really soon now that are going to really be showcasing the Red Queen, or as we know her, the Queen of Hearts.
Yeah. Okay. There's one called Off With Their Heads, which is a Korean inspired take on the Alice in Wonderland story.
Because everyone's been waiting for a Korean based Alice in Wonderland story.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Keep going.
You have a little tea. You have some kimchi. Come on, guys. Okay. So that one came out on April 23rd.
I don't think the Grand Floridian is going to be serving that anytime soon, Jim. But okay, go ahead.
We can only hope. Okay. And then there was Wonderland Beyond the Isle of the Lost, which is supposed to be a prequel to Descendants, The Rise of Red. And that hits bookstore shelves next week on May 7th.
All right. So this is what's going on with the Back to Wonderland show at the Studios Park in Paris. It's a stunt show, pop rock thing that was put in development to help the Descendants.
Well, I think you just about checked all the boxes in the Venn diagram. But yeah, I'll go with that. It sounds like that's the plan. That's what they're going to go with. But for right now, let's circle back to those Tim Burton, Alice in Wonderland movies that Disney weighed way back in 2010. It seems like a decade ago. Wait, it was. Anyway, that version of Alice was the design template used for the Alice in Wonderland maze over there in Shanghai Disneyland when it came time for them to bring a version of Alice to that new park. Which is understandable why they'd pick that IP at that point in time, because frankly, you know, the original Tim Burton versions of the Alice characters are the only characters they know of Alice. Because remember, when the original classic animated Alice Wonderland was released in 1951 here in the United States produced films were not showcased in the Republic of China.
All right, so Shul, though, so when the Imagineers who were working on Disneyland Paris did the Alice maze there, that was from the 1951 film. What's the maze called?
Oh, that's Alice's Curious Labyrinth.
Labyrinth, got it. Okay, so going back to Wonderland and Rise of Red, Jim Shul, during your time at Imagineering, did you ever have to deal with stuff like this, an IP that the company was like super excited to get into the parks? And something that they wanted like to get out really, really, really soon, strike while the iron is hot.
It seemed like there was always a flavor of the week every month, Len. But you know,
a flavor of the week every month. we have like, minds for marketing here.
Well, yeah, I mean, Exhibit A would be Disney Fairies. I mean, you guys recently talked on the Disney Dish about how the success of the Disney Princess line led to the company trying to turn Tinkerbell and their Pixie Pals into their own billion-dollar IP franchise. I mean, we don't have to rehash that story, at least not here. But we did, this past month, talk about a subject dear and dear to my heart, which is adaptive reuse.
Yeah, that's true. We did that over on Patreon as one of the carry-ons to accompany our Buzz Lightyear show this month.
Yeah, and now that we've moved on from that, well, the Disney Fairies, at least as far as adaptive reuse is concerned, it's a prime example of WDI using that practice in the parks where it's appropriate.
And what do you mean by appropriate there, Jim?
Well, as opposed to inappropriate, but that's a story for another time. But okay, you know, let's look at the Disney Fairies meet and greet. When it came to the park in Anaheim, they had a piece of land which was still being used for Pixie, well, that they wanted to use for Pixie Hollow, but it was being used at that time for Ariel's Grotto. And, you know, not to say that Ariel Grotto was terrible, but it had been there for a while, and Pixie Hollow was the new flavor of the week. So they took that area over and, you know, did some major adjustment, bringing in giant plants and giant props. And suddenly there was a new marquee, and what had been Ariel's Grotto now became Pixie Hollow.
And wasn't that where the old House of the Future was from the 60s? Sacred ground, yeah, if you will?
Yeah, yeah. The scent of plastic still lingers in the air. And along with the water feature that was created for the House of the Future, that is the ultimate example of reuse. Because when you stand there looking at that water, that's the same water system that dates all the way back to the mid-1950s when the House of the Future was built.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And as we mentioned on again an earlier Disney dish, I mean, Pixie Hollow was also supposed to be part of the new Fantasyland expansion project at Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom until it wasn't.
Yeah, big ideas that everyone supports suddenly leave and disappear in a flash. I mean, let's face it: if a movie that everyone is certain the next big will be the next big thing flops, or is even mildly disappointing, then a hot project that everyone's behind, suddenly they show up at work the next day and find out, well, find another job number, guys.
The interesting thing about this one, especially talking about New Fantasyland and how Pixie Hollow came and went, was I'm sure that prior to Pixie Hollow not being in New Fantasyland, there was tons of research, tons of analysis done on just exactly how popular the fairies were. And then Jim Hill, was it Tom Staggs who said, but all I've got are sons and they're not interested in fairies. And that was that.
But the interesting thing is Staggs could then speak anecdotally because by that point, they now had numbers on how, for example, the Disney fairies DVDs were selling and the toys. And it was like, okay, you know, maybe this isn't a $1 billion franchise. Maybe this is just a $500 million franchise. And you know, oddly enough, Disney's one of the only companies like, well, we don't want to do that if we're only going to make $500.
Maybe $600 million we'll talk, but not a half a billion. No, don't waste our time.
Okay.
Exactly. You know. Go sit at the kids' table. All right. So Shoal, do you have a favorite project that was proposed for the parks that that got tripped up by something like this?
Yeah. I mean, top of mind is going to be Atlantis, The Lost Empire. I mean, that was released to theaters in the summer of 2001. And, well, it didn't succeed as hoped. I mean, it did well, but it just didn't do what the kind of blockbuster business that you build a franchise on. So in that regard, it disappointed.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that. Friends working at the company at the time, and you guys had two attractions of size in the works that were supposed to key off of that Kirk Weiss and Gary Trousdale movie. There was the Atlantis Expedition that was supposed to be that really ambitious reimagining of the subs at Disneyland.
Yeah, I remember there was a lot of enthusiasm because I remember meeting with Don Hahn, who was the producer of that movie. And, you know, he was really hot on it because and the entire company was hot on it because, again, he pitched it as every other movie in the Disney animated classic series had always entered through Fantasyland. And for the very first time, they were going to take a hard left off the hub and go into Adventureland, which for the company was going to be brand new ground to till.
So that was for Disneyland for the subs, but wasn't there supposed to be something in the Magic Kingdom? Was this the coaster in Adventureland?
Yeah, we had a hot project. I mean, we being the Royal We, because it wasn't my project, but I was in the building at the time when they were building and discussing building Fire Mountain. And they were going to look at that from a couple different angles. I mean, in my office, I've got this beautiful sketch piece that was given to me by Chase Craig when, you know, they had a coaster inside of a volcano. And that is another iteration of Fire Mountain. But we know, again, that, you know, it didn't succeed as they thought it was. And the assumption was, and the logic was, that people wouldn't go to a theme park based on a movie that they didn't like.
But, all right, now, what I find ironic about that is that given that when Disney's hand-drawn version of Elvis came out in July of 51, didn't get great reviews, right? And also didn't do all that well at the box office, and Walt himself was said to be disappointed with the way that the finished film turned out. But yet, this same guy didn't hesitate to put Alice-themed rides into Disneyland.
I'm reminded here, Jim Hill, that necessity is the mother of invention. So teacups for opening day. And then, okay. But when did the Alice dark ride open?
Oh, okay. That was actually a little late. It was June of 58. But interesting story. There was so little room to build in Fantasyland at that point. It was Disney's first ever two-story attraction.
And it's kind of like on the outer limits of what I would consider Disneyland, Fantasyland. I know Small World is back there too, but like there's that main corridor of Fantasyland and it's off to the side, right?
Yeah. And bathrooms. Don't forget about bathrooms.
And bathrooms.
Okay. There we go. Okay.
Okay. So June of 58. And then Jim Scholl, I imagine this is because Walt was calling the shots here, not because somebody had looked at an Excel spreadsheet in 1958.
Yeah, you know, it's really hard to argue with the boss when he's living in an apartment over on Main Street and walks around the park every single night. You know, when he says, go build it, you don't listen to him.
Hi, I'm Walt Disney of Disneyland. Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
Here's my card. I don't need a card. It's, my name's over there above the door. But anyway, long story short, again, you know, today, that was then and this is now. And today, the Walt Disney Company is a lot bigger than in Walt's day and has many, many more plates to spin. But, you know, anyway, long story short, again, you know, everybody wants the right thing to go to any of the Disney parks. You don't want to be the flavor of the week. You know, you want to be the sort of attractions that guests will enjoy, not for a single summer or a season, but to be an evergreen attraction and to last for decades for everyone to enjoy.
Fair. Okay. So to go back to this this new stunt show, pop rock show for Studios Park in Paris, do you want to make a prediction about whether Alice and the Queen of Hearts Back to Wonderland will actually be here years from now?
I'm shaking my magic eight ball. It's got a crack in it. And it says, check back later. But anyway, long story short, again, Len, I'm just really happy for the team because they're reusing the old facility, that one that has 2,000 people sitting directly over a block of toilets, that one. So I sincerely wish the entertainment team great success when Alice in Wonderland opens really soon now at the Disney Studios Paris.
That is a very diplomatic answer, and I will join you in that too. I'm glad that something's going there. Something is better
Well, once in a while I get it right. What can I say? You
know? Okay, now speaking of lights, motor, action, we talk about that sun show on our next Disney Impact. And in fact, on that show over on Patreon, we look back at the whole history of stunt shows at Disney theme parks. And Mr. Scholl shares all sorts of stories and insights.
And when does that Disney Impact episode air?
Yeah. It's Sunday, May 5th on Patreon.
All right. And then I'm going to ask Eric if my story about meeting Robbie Knievel, who is literally the coolest human being I've ever met in my entire life, if that's still made it. So Eric, I think is going to nod yes for that. I'm not kidding. The coolest individual I've ever met in my entire life. All right, but enough with the plugs. Thank you, Jim Scholl, for joining us on this week's Disney Dish.
Well, as always, Len, it's my pleasure. And Jim, I'm now going to leave and go start watching, what now, 4 seasons of Descendants.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for the show today. You can help support our show by subscribing over at patreon.com/JimHaleMedia, where we're posting exclusive shows every week. Our most recent shows include Picture This, with Jim Scholl's photo-based discussions of Buzz Lightyear, and a discussion with entertainment writer Drew Taylor on the emotions that didn't make it into the movie Inside Out. Check it out at patreon.com/JimHaleMedia. You can find more of Jim at jimhillmedia.com and more of me, Lynn, at touringplans.com. We're produced spectacularly by Eric Hersey, who's joining Social Distortion for a live rendition of Ball and Chain this coming Saturday, May the 4th, with opening act Bad Religion at The Rooftop at Pier 17, which is in Manhattan, but for the purposes of this podcast, is in New Jersey. Greg Graffin knows why. While Eric's doing that, please go on to iTunes and rate our show and tell us what you'd like to hear next. For Jim, this is Len. We'll see you on the next show.